About the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt. And Matt, yes. And Shelby.
Matt and Shelby and
Shelby.
Shelby
and Matt and Matt and Shelby.
And yeah. Matt and Shelby. And some of us are from the future, and some of us
Who
are
knows?
Not. And
yeah.
You're yeah. just going to have to wait and find out what's going on.
I'm sort of curious. I'm curious who has watched this movie. I feel like it has no impact, but maybe that's wrong. Because it is a streaming movie, which sometimes makes it easier. But I feel like no one has talked about this, whereas something like Palm Springs, but that was during COVID. So I don't know if I'm just like out of touch, but I feel like no one's heard of this movie.
It's fascinating. So I've been down here in Florida for a month. So
oh, okay. Yeah. One of the people.
Right. Yes. One with the people. I'm doing recon and what yeah. the sort of gen pop of America is interested in. And it is fascinating because, like, I'm staying in my grandparents' old house, which is sort of like sitting empty. But my aunt, uncle, and cousins live like a couple of miles away. So a couple of days a week, we'll like get dinner, go back to their house, like watch something. Okay. You know, and they are very, I would say, like run-of-the-mill sort of people, right. I guess. Like, they've lived here most, like, my cousins have lived here their whole lives. Like, you know, they go to work, they come home, they have a couple of friends. They're not really, like, doing that much stuff. Mm-hmm, and they're definitely not, like, plugged into culture, I would say, in the same way that, like, you or I are. But it is fascinating because I would say that they probably watch the same amount of media as we do.
Oh, like, okay. Like the same amount of screen time.
Yes, it's the same amount of screen time, but it's like vastly different things. Mm-hmm. And it's very much a situation of like they get home and they're like, what do we watch? And they just open up the streaming apps and sort of like pick things that are presented to them. Like, I don't think they have a good sense of like what's coming or, you know, like that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But they are, like, watching stuff that are on. So they knew about this movie, and I did not know about this movie because I guess, like, they had seen it on, you know, Netflix or whatever, and it had been, like, Netflix's – or no, this was a Hulu movie, I think.
Yeah.
This had been, like, Hulu's number one movie. And they were like, oh, should we watch this? Or then they also really wanted to watch Mercy, the Chris Pratt movie, which we watched last night, because that, you know, had been in theaters but, like, was now on streaming. So they were like, okay, let's watch that.
Double and then they feature.
Right. And then we didn't end up watching it, but also Pretty Lethal is some like ballerina killer movie or whatever that I guess is out on Prime Video, which I had also never heard of. But they were like, oh yeah, like these are like the big things to be watching right now. And they watch a lot of like the series that are on, you know, like like thriller kind of series that are on these streaming platforms, and I'm like, oh, I have never watched this. I've never heard of anybody who's watched this, but like clearly people are watching it. It is my family.
Cute.
So it was sort of fascinating to get to talk to them about like what they like, what they don't like. We went and saw Project Hail Mary, which they love. We went and saw Hoppers, which they loved.
Cute.
None of us liked this movie. So I will say that the response was not good. And it was funny because when we were deciding what to watch like earlier this week, it was okay, should we watch Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice or should we watch Mercy? And I was like, oh, well, let's look at the reviews.
Yeah.
And Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice had like 78% or something on Rotten Tomatoes, where Mercy had like a 25%.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we all agreed that Mercy was by far the more watchable movie of the two.
Really? Just Chris Pratt in a in an audio video room.
Mercy is bad. It is bad.
Okay.
But it is bad in something a very fun. Watchable way. Mm. It is 90 mm. minutes. The whole thing is just wackadoo. Rebecca Ferguson is giving like an all-time performance as a face on the wall. Chris Pratt is sort of doing nothing. He's just stuck in the chair. Yeah. And like every twist and turn is more ridiculous than the last.
Yeah.
There's a line that we were dying at. We went back and watched it like several times because Chris Pratt is, you know, using AI to examine the crime scene.
Yeah.
And the knife that was used has a fingerprint on it, but it's just his fingerprint. And he says this line where he's like, his wife is Nicole, and he's like, Nick was always a little afraid of that knife, so I did the chopping. And we're like, what? Afraid of that knife? Like what kind of crazy line of dialogue was this written by some man of like, oh, well, the reason why her fingerprints aren't on the knife is because she was afraid of that knife. Like, oh my gosh. It was wackadoo, but it was very watchable and it was only 90 minutes. This was confusing and kind of boring, I think. And so, yeah, we got to the end and we were like, what? Like, it wasn't as funny as it needed to be a comedy. Yeah. It wasn't interesting really as a time travel movie. It really wasn't that good as an action movie. It also takes a long time to sort of like set up what is happening.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different characters and side plots that don't work. Yeah, this was bad, I thought.
Well, yeah, it was interesting because like nothing's in theaters, so I was like, oh, I saw these reviews for this movie and it's like everyone's like, oh, so fun, blending genres, hilarious madcap buddy comedy, space travel, whatever. And I was like, okay, like I love a little movie that can. But it wasn't like painful, like, but it wasn't I don't know. I was expecting more, I guess. And as I finished it, I was like, this is like over and no one will think about it again. Like, I saw some sort of headline that was like,
so
is it setting up for a sequel? And I'm like, no, it's clearly, clearly not. I don't know. I mean, the stars James Marsden and Vince Vaughn. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily hard to follow. I think my problem is, it has like a weird tone. Like the tone is uneven in a way where the comedy switches. Like,
yeah,
you have the like, because they're mobsters, they're like gangsters. Like Nick is a loan shark enforcer basically, and as is Mike, and they work for like a mob boss. And the mob boss's comedy with his son is like very goofy, surrealist, like over the top, like whatever. And honestly, that stuff was funnier to me because at least it was like weird and silly. But then the comedy between the main characters was much more your classic like bro-y sort of, I don't know, like generic buddy comedy. And so you'd get like this whiplash where it was like, is this supposed to be like ultra campy and just weird and goofy? Or is it just kind of your like regular, you know, B-list action thriller? And then the ending, it goes full like John Wick in a way I wasn't expecting. And that's where I was like, this doesn't know necessarily what it wants to be, or it thinks having a sense of humor about everything is enough justification to make these jokes about anything. But it's like, well, it doesn't serve the plot in any real way. Like, it's too disparate. It's too, like, it was just, like, tonally confusing to me personally.
Yeah, it was written and directed by a man named Ben David Grabinski, whose only like previous movie is something from 2021 called Happily, starring Joel McHale, which I had never seen or heard of. But yeah, no, it's like, it wasn't, there were moments that kind of felt like, oh, like maybe this is more like in a Naked Gun sort of way. But then like that was, but where Naked Gun like has its tone throughout the entire film and sticks with it and nails it, this kept sort of changing and coming back and forth. Is this like a Lethal Weapon, sort of where it's mostly action but has some funny one-liners? Is this, yeah, more goofy? What's the vibe? And then, so the basic premise is that Vince, I'm like, how am I, like, I'm all, I, the movie was so forgettable and dull that I am
James
already,
Marsden
like,
is James, Nick, James and Vince is Mike.
No, it's the other way around. James Marsden is Mike, because there's two Vince.
Oh, Vince, there's
so
two.
So they
Nicks.
Have to be Nicks.
Okay, yeah. So it's Mike and Nick, and Nick and Alice is the movie name. Okay, right. Yeah. It's future Nick and present Nick.
So James Marsden and Vince Vaughn are colleagues. Like, they work for the same boss. Yeah. And Vince Vaughn is married to Isa Gonzalez. Uh-huh. But they don't love each other. And Isa Gonzalez is having an affair with James Marsden. Correct. So there's sort of like a love triangle in the center of that. But then Vince Vaughn goes into a time machine in the future and comes out in the past. So then there's actually two Vince Vaughns in this plotline, which is why there's two Nicks.
Yeah. 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 I mean, honestly, the time travel didn't bother me. I think it's like a funny idea.
Well, because they didn't really do that much with it.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, like, it's very simple. It's very much like the only rule that matters is that if something happens to present Nick, future Nick will also have that happen.
Yes. Like, because at one point, like, they stab present Nick in the leg, and then future Nick goes like, oh, I have a scar that I didn't realize that I had.
Yeah.
And so also
one rule.
It's set up very early that when future Nick came back through the time machine, he accidentally shot the man who built it and blew it up. So so this is their one chance at basically saving James Marsden's life, because that's why he had to go back in the time machine.
Yeah, which premise-wise, it makes sense why this was, like, bought by a major studio and had enough press around it to get, like, you know, reviewers in the seat and interviews with Hollywood Reporter and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's – like, I liked the opening. Anything that plays homage to that Oliver and Company song is great.
That was the best part.
I was immediately clocked in. I was like,
there was a lot of good
music
cues in here. There was a lot of good music, and I was like, oh, they clearly spent a lot of money on the rights, except for a lot of the songs were Disney songs. So I was kind of like, okay, maybe that's why this had to be used. Disney was like, you can use any song that we own for free. So we're going to start with the Oliver and Company theme song.
Iconic. I mean, great. The best New York song, if I'm being honest. Like, hands down. So I was like, oh, okay, great. And then Ben Schwartz, wait, that's who?
Yes.
That's the actor, right? Yeah. Yes. He immediately also gets killed. And so I was like, okay, this is fun. This is fun. And I think it's a simple enough, like, rule. But then it enters this sort of, like, a Christmas Carol messaging where I was like, okay, I don't buy this. It's been 6 months and you have this, like, serious change of heart, because the thing is that Mike is about to be killed because the head gangster thinks that he was a snitch the mole that got his son, his adopted son, in prison for 6 years. So all of this hinges on one night of epic partying on the release of this son, the mobster's beloved. And even that was, like, silly enough that I was like, okay, it's sort of a get to the party, but it's all hinging on this, like, mistaken, like, hit. But as it went on, it got more convoluted and kind of lost steam.
No, it reminded me a lot of The Fall Guy in that way, where it's like the basic premise of this movie is good. And there are chunks of it that sort of work. But the organized crime machination is just too confusing. And there's sort of too many people at play, and it's unclear what's going on. So yeah, as the movie
but
goes,
it's just
you're
goofy.
Just, you're just
it's
like
not a real crime.
No,
family.
No.
They're having but it's after not, parties of after parties.
But it's not goofy in a way that like is. Like it doesn't fit because it's not all goofy.
Yeah.
But then it's not all serious. It's just, yeah, it's confusing and convoluted and has way too many things that I think the movie thinks are like, oh, this is a clever twist. And it's like, yeah. A twist only works if it's clear. And instead, these twists just sort of confuse and muddle everything.
Like,
so by the time you get to the end of the story, you're like, wait a second. And who hired the Baron? And you set up this person, but then that person didn't know, so they had to go back in time to whatever. It's just like, no.
Yeah, no. I think the way they justified the choices was confusing. I didn't have a problem with the mob boss and the like practical moment of Mike is going to be killed wrongly, and it turns out that Nick sort of framed him, and now the mob boss can't be dissuaded. But once they were like trying to tie in these like random asides to Canada or something, that's where I was like,
and cannibalism.
No. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't need this necessarily. And I honestly, my favorite parts of the movie were the mob boss and what is it, Jimmy Baby or Baby Jim.
Yes, the Jimmy Tatro character, Jimmy Boy.
Like, I would have taken a whole movie of him, like, wondering if his dick will ever work again, and his very black father explaining to this very white son that he found him in a dumpster where he was being watched over by rats. Like, I thought that was funny, but the Nick and Mike stuff was much more lame to me.
I also loved every time Emily Hampshire came up as like the crooked cop, the woman from Schitt's Creek. Yeah, because I thought that she was good too.
She like
you know what?
In and puts a grenade in the
in the fridge, and is like, oh, you might need this later. Yeah. I honestly now that I'm thinking about this, I think part of the problem is the tone. Like, the tone is part of the problem. But I also, I'm just, like, reading the tea leaves of how I think this script got written. And this feels very much to me like a movie that was written by a man that was going to be about, like, mob-related things. And probably did not have like a super strong female character in it. And then at some point they were like, oh, actually we need a woman in this movie. So we need like more plotline regarding her. And it feels like the love triangle plot, like, and her involvement in everything sort of is part of the confusing bit. And also she's not funny. So that also, I think, then leads to the scenes with the three of them being less
girl,
interesting.
You in danger. Yeah, no, I think that's, I don't think that's true. I see your point, but I think he was like proudly like, this is the movie I pitched, this is it. And I feel like the romance is sort of the linchpin because it's like, why? Because Nick finds out about Mike's affair and that's why he frames him. But then once he's killed and eaten by a cannibal, he feels guilty. And that's why when he gets to the time machine, he's like, well, I'm going to go back and change that because I like regret the impulse to kill this guy for cheating on a woman I'm already cheating on and I don't love. And so that's like his sort of come to Jesus moment is like, oops, that wasn't worth it.
Yeah, so maybe she was there originally, but just I don't think is a well-written character, and it feels like she's more there as like a plot device than as somebody who's interesting.
Because
and I think that does sort of like
Benjamin,
slow down everything and make it. Because like if she was fun, like let's say you get like Goldie Hawn or somebody in this role, it's like they could really like zhuzh it up. And make it interesting because theoretically it's like she should be really confused over the fact that there's a time travel person and then also like that her husband, who she doesn't like, is trying to screw over. Like, I think there's a lot of different angles that you could sort of play there in a really fun way. And instead, they were just like, no, we want a sexy woman in here. So let's get like a hot person who's just going to sort of like be hot.
You know, I honestly think the weak part of this movie is Vince Vaughn.
I don't think that she's the weak part. No, I think the writing is the weak part of the movie.
No, for sure. The weak part is the – you're right. The weak part is the script. But also Vince Vaughn is doing nothing here in both cases. Like, we've had enough –
yes.
We've had enough, like, twin situations where the actor is able to have fun with twins. You know, like, thinking of Twinless, thinking of, obviously, Sinners. But, like, Vince Vaughn, obviously there's only a 6-month difference and they are literally the same person. They're not twins. But I just feel like he was sleeping through this role. And I feel like if you'd had someone zanier or kookier in this role, the movie would have felt more fun. But he plays it so straight. And I just wish they'd had someone with a little bit higher energy, because he's giving nothing.
Yeah, they also needed to somehow differentiate between the two of them better. Yeah. Like, even if it was something as stupid as, like, oh, the new one has an eye patch, or, you know, like, I don't, like, that something had happened to him in the intervening 6 months that could have made it more, like, oh, now he has a limp, or now he has a scar, or something. Because it was kind of hard to tell the two of them apart at various points.
Oh, yeah. I had no idea.
And it wasn't like, I mean, obviously, Michael B. Jordan won an Oscar for this, but it's like, I feel like with Smoke and Stack, like, they're twins, yes, but you can, like, very clearly differentiate between the two of them of, like, okay, this is this one, this is this one. They have different attitudes. And I think that at some point, the two Nicks needed to have some sort of differentiation, or even if it was just character-wise of, like, oh, he used to be, like, this really, like, nasty person, but then he, like, but then he saw his friend get eaten alive and went to some self-help thing.
He's now overboard, like,
oh, but let's all, like, take a stock and, like, is anyone feeling unsafe, you know? I think there's ways you could work this.
Yeah, a little more therapy, a little more softness. Because they do try and imply that, like, oh, this is your come to Jesus moment. And he has, like, this whole, like, the lamest bit to me was the cannibal, like, fake out. Because it's like, okay, you're teaching this guy a lesson, like, so that you can skip to the part where present Nick realizes he doesn't want Mike to die. So they, like, fake Mike dying. And then Nick gets on the phone with Nick and is like, I needed you to feel how bad it feels so we could, you know, it was, like, very serious and kind of like, okay, this is still, like, eye roll territory for me. And I feel like, yeah, obviously I don't think they could afford to have the two Nicks in the same scene that often, but I feel like the Nicks should have fought each other, or, like, had more FaceTime, like, one-on-one, like, wrestling with each other, whether that's physically or verbally, you know?
Because
I don't know, he's like, oh, and by the way, I have a I don't even know, it was like, he's like, they have this, like, convoluted plan to save him from the cannibal assassin. But then it turns out it wasn't actually that convoluted, because Nick is a sharpshooter and can, you know, he's, like, in the building across the way with a sniper rifle, and he takes him out just like that. And that leads to my second frustration with the film, which is that the ending, when they decide the only solution is to murder everyone, I was like, wait a second. This does not make sense contextually. Like, but also, you have just traveled back in time because you felt guilty about killing someone who was innocent for the specific crime that you framed them for. But now you're going to kill all your other buddies because they're, like, in the way of the mob boss. Like, I was like, I'm confused about the relationships here, and also why you are going to murder 25 people to save this one man.
Yeah, and I think it would have made more sense if he was like, oh, I realize, like, not, like, necessarily, like, That if he'd been like, oh, I realize like the mob is bad and is the problem. And so I've had a change of heart. And so now I'm going back to like correct this. But yeah, it would have made more sense if he was just like, oh, let's get all of these people put in jail. But instead it's like, no, we're going to kill them all.
Because they wanted a sort of bloody contemporary, like, I feel like this has been done in so many movies. Like, I remember Freaky Tales from last year, which is more of a revenge fantasy, so a little darker. But, like, I feel like we've done this. Or maybe I'm thinking a lot. It reminded me a lot of Barry, the TV show.
Well, I mean, yes, because there is a Barry actor.
Yeah,
yes, there's actors multiple from Barry actors.
But I think they also had a scene where it's like, oh, well, I'm going to save my friends, so I'm going to murder everyone in this house. Like, I feel like this is a very common trope of, like, got to get through this house, and whoever's in here is collateral damage. But it was just, like, it was, like, I could see a universe where this worked, and it was funny, but it felt so, like, okay, this is your big plan? Like, it was very convoluted. Like, they had to add a lot of language to justify this, where it's, like, oh, the mob boss is still determined to kill Mike, so he's going to tell everyone to kill him in the morning, so this is the only way to save him. It's like, have you ever had a dialogue? Like, can you just try to talk to the mob boss about how you framed him, please? But no. No interest
yeah,
in that.
Yeah, and the script, yeah, it's just bad because it's confusing. I think that the way that you have to set up, like, a movie that has a plan like this is that somebody at the beginning needs to say, like, oh, okay, this is exactly what we're doing, and that needs to make sense, and then you need to sort of see that go awry as it goes on because of various, you know, variables that enter the equation. But this, I never felt like I had any clarity as to what the plan really was.
Right. They're winging it.
Right. Well, and you spend the first bit of the movie, I think because they want to make the time travel sort of gag of it all. That they don't reveal that right away. So there's some moments where, like, you, because you know the movie's about time travel, can sort of, like, pick up as to what is going on, but they are not really saying the plan. And so that's confusing. Yeah, it's just, there's just a lot of things that don't really work with the, like, morals of it and then, like, the various people's reasoning. Because I'm sure if we sat through this and, like, went through each character and were like, okay, what do they know at various points and why are they making the actions that they're making? None of it would make sense. It's all very, like, oh, this is sort of convenient in this moment, but then not convenient in this other moment. And it's so muddled that you get to the end and you're like, wait, I actually don't have any thoughts about this because it's just so, there's so many different things going on.
Yeah, and like I was saying, like, some of the funniest jokes are sort of, like, throwaways. Like, it has to do with, like, Jimmy Bob, like, jumping out of a window and killing himself, basically. Or, which, like, is, like, funny, but it doesn't work because it's, like, half-assed in this.
And there's, like, a running joke about, like, Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm not a Gilmore Girls fan, I don't know. I didn't know who these characters were that they were talking about. But I was like, oh, I think that, like, this is sort of funny, but it didn't really match tonally again with the rest of it, that all of these, like, mobsters were really into Gilmore Girls and invested in these various plot lines.
And I again blame Vince Vaughn, because it's like, okay, James Marsden is really able to kind of toe that line of, like, serious and kind of goofy and feel like a real person still. But, like, I did not buy for one second, like, Vince Vaughn's attachment to Gilmore Girls.
Right.
Or, like, him having fun making that a bit in this. Like, it.
Right.
Like, he just was not having a good time. And I think part of that was a character choice of him being, like, the straight man who's, like, pretty serious and, like, I'm the planner and I've got to. But even so, he's, like, his whole character bit is he's impulsive. And it's, so it's, like, I feel like he could have had more fun and been sort of, like, your Jersey Shore type of mobster where it's, like, I don't know. He just was so uptight in this that I wish someone had just, like, told him to dial it up, like, 10 degrees.
It's interesting because, like, while he is a comedy actor who I feel like is most known for comedic stuff, he has been in a lot more of these, like, action-y kind of movies as of late. rather than like straight comedies. But I don't think it helped me with this movie that the most recent movie I'd seen him in is Nonas, where I do think he's actually good. And I think that's actually like a good, sweet, fun movie that's like very simple in the premise. And then this, it was like, oh, I know you're capable of a level of charisma that is not on display here.
Yeah.
And I think so, like James Marsden also, I think is a really good actor. I mean, we should also talk about Jury Duty if you've watched so far. But like, he's so good in so many things. And I think he is the best actor of this trio at the center of this. But even he is not really able to give like a full bodied performance in the way that I think he's capable of. I don't know if that's the writing or the directing or what, but.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, are you watching Company Retreat?
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
Okay.
Remember?
Interesting.
Remember? Vaguely. You gave me your pitch about doing season three and a
Oh, yes. That's right. How quickly I forget Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice and also this. Well, are you up to date? Have you watched the two new episodes?
I'm going to be honest. I'm just not liking it. I'm not enjoying it. And you know what? I spend the whole time thinking about other ideas. And I think what they should do for season four is, I think that they should ask couples, like newish couples, to nominate their partner to go to do a fake family reunion. Like a big extended family. So it would be a real couple, you know, like a real boyfriend, girlfriend. But because I feel like those viral TikToks of like, oh, I didn't tell my I told my boyfriend we say the Pledge of Allegiance at dinner or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So it'd be that, where it's a real family. Well, no, it's a real couple, but then they go to this like extended family with all these weird neurotic things. And then it's fun because it's like a dating show of will they make it out of this?
Well, also, I think that would work well because then you have the ad, like, because I think we're going to get to a point where if you're in some sort of weird situation with a whole bunch of new people and everybody's crazy, you're going to think, wait a second, is this a Jury Duty show?
Yeah.
But if one of the other people in it is someone that you know outside of the situation, then you're obviously not going to be questioning it because you're going to be like, oh, okay, exactly. This must be real.
Yeah. And it could be like, oh, we're filming it because my great grandmother was like, I don't know, some justifiable reason this would be a film. Like she was a reporter or she was the last known, she's the secret cousin of Marilyn Monroe or something, you know, like there's reasons it would be filmed. And so that's my pitch. I think that would make, because what I said last time and what continues to irritate me with this Company Retreat is like, no one is behaving like a real employee. Like, they're all so nice and chill and all together on it. And I'm just like, I'm too burned, I guess. I do not believe this. And that would be my number one question is like, why is everyone being so like chill about this? Like, there's no snarky asides, no secret text threads. Like, everyone's just, and everyone has so much free time. Like, what do you mean you're making a YouTube video in the middle of this retreat? Like, no, I refuse.
There is a lot of like, you know, it's a documentary or whatever, but supposedly, but I'm like, there is a lot of like camera time where they are being interviewed for things. I think that this season, I don't like it as much as the first season. Yeah. I think there's two issues. One, I do think is that James Marsden really brought a lot of life and energy to the first one. And you're missing that aspect here.
Yeah.
But two, I think that, because what they are trying to have happen is that, like, a good person is put in this wacky situation and then sort of makes the right decision at the end. And so in the jury, it was obvious sort of what that would be in that they need to determine if this is either, if the guy is either innocent or guilty, and they sort of want the man on the jury to realize, oh, wait, this is sort of like a setup and do what is best for society. I think the problem is that in this season, the dilemma is, should they sell the company to the evil corporation, or should the company get taken over by like the kind of dumb son?
Yeah.
And I don't think that the son is that likable. Like, I think that if I was in the situation, I'd be like, okay, well, it obviously shouldn't go to the son, but it also shouldn't go to this evil corporation. It should probably go to that sort of bossy girl who's in the group instead, who like wants to be the CEO. But that's obviously not what they're trying to do. They want him to choose the son and be like, oh, he has potential. Like,
yeah, they're all so nice about the son.
Right.
And I'm like, this guy is a moron who's like, who's risking your jobs now, especially that.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch the last, because I figure there's more about like, oh, he wants to sell the company in the next episode. Because I only watched the first one of the new batch.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The last one of this has a lot more to do with the company and sort of like the weird things that the like venture capitalist group have going on. Mm-hmm. But it is, I think the problem is that the son is just like a little too doofy. And I think that if they were setting up this equation, they needed to make him seem a little bit more competent and maybe like accidentally screwed up one big thing, and that rather than just sort of seem like bad at everything.
Or it's like the people should have been like, this guy's an idiot, we can't have him, like acting against him. And then they realize their other option is to be replaced by AI, and they're like, oh right, shit, like we'll help him be a better boss type
right
thing.
Yes.
Because yeah, like as is, it's like if I was here, like I just imagine you and I facing down this like future boss and the amount of shit talking we would be doing. And we wouldn't be like, okay, I'm gonna go hike a mountain to try and find this loser who's feeling bad about himself. Like, I wouldn't. I'm sorry.
And so, I would be going, but I would be complaining the entire time.
Yeah. And I just feel like, I feel like obviously everyone should be nice. And maybe that's a call to repentance for myself. But it just doesn't ring true. And I'm not saying they have to be like cutthroat and like make this some sort of succession style evil company. Like, I like the people, but I feel like they could also be realistic about what it would feel like to work. You know, you're coming to this job and all it ends up being is a soap opera between a father and a son, and you're just kind of like annoyed to be set dressing for a choice you have no power in. Like, that's corporate America.
I do think that the first season, the other people on the jury were like a bit thornier as a group. Like, James Marsden's character was obviously like sort of unlikable. And there were some of the other jurors who were like either checked out or kind of like rude about stuff. And I feel like everybody in this group is a little too chipper.
They're all so nice. Yeah, they're all like even the like mean girl is still like, we believe in you. You know,
right,
like,
exactly.
Talk.
Right.
And it's like, I just need some bitchy representation, I guess, if we're doing a corporate America skit. Like, that's...
The thing is, I'm just so excited for the last episode where they, like, do the reveal and also we get to see how everything worked. Because I loved that episode of the first season where it's like, oh, and the bailiff, like, screwed up someone's name. So they had to, you know, redo this other thing. Like, I want to see how they put it all together. I think that's the most interesting part. So I am kind of like, okay, everybody, like, chop, chop. Like, let's get to the end. I want to watch that.
Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways this is a lot fairer, like, a lot gentler for the gotcha guy like Anthony or whatever, because I think the mind fuck of the first one is like, this is a real case, like this is like a real, there's a real weightiness to it,
right?
And also you're like navigating, you're like, I don't know, like there just feels something more like serious about it. And then to have the curtain pulled back and be like, we all were lying to you, this entire like court was lying to you, like there was just a lot more of a cast in the first one because you had recurring characters of the judge, of the different lawyers, of the case and the witnesses, whereas this is like you have like 10 people and that's it. Like, yeah, there's a few people who come in and leave, but like the lady who does the like inspo talk isn't affecting his view of the world, you know? So I feel like it's easier for Anthony to be like, oh, LOL, that's funny. Like, you got me. You guys are goofballs. That was fun. Like, it was a vacation, you know? He's, like, at the pool. Yeah. He's eating chips. He's doing videos. So I appreciate that that hopefully his mental world isn't as shook as perhaps it would be to have a judge tell you, just kidding, I was lying under oath, you know?
Uh-huh.
So that's good. That's good to protect him in that way. And I do think Anthony has a personality where it's like, he will thrive in a sort of, like, he's very personable. He clearly likes to put himself out there. Like, he's much more vocal and forward facing than even the first guy was. So it's like, yeah. I can see him enjoying the notoriety that will come from this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, charming. And especially because he doesn't have to compete with the whole cast of Bachelors, you know, for, yeah. for brand deals. He can just get them all himself.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm like, is there anything else that we want to talk about either about this movie or aside from this movie? Because I'm like, I have nothing else to say.
I just want to say that, like, men be failing up. Like, it's like, yeah, this movie wasn't terrible, but it is, like, wild to me. The amount of, like, good press and attention this got and, like, publicity. Yeah,
that's deranged.
And it's just, like, it's, like, fine, but there's so many straight-to-streaming movies that don't get your, like, Hollywood Reporter and, you know, Deadline interviews and New York Times, you know, covers. And I'm just kind of, like, not covers, but, like, coverage. And mm-hmm. and it's just kind of, like, frustrating to me and also made me think of the beloved trailer that I don't usually watch movie trailers because I like know to skip them time wise to get to my movies at AMC. But I got to a movie this weekend earlier and I sat down and this trailer started for this like hyper serious film that quickly started to feel like an SNL skit. And it's called Pressure and it stars Brendan Fraser and Andrew Scott. And it's like a World War II movie. So they're very serious. But then it turns out the premise is that General Eisenhower needs to know what the weather will be like on D-Day. And he's like, I gotta get a weatherman in here. And then it's a 2-hour movie that seems to be about Andrew Scott saying, it's gonna rain. And Eisenhower's like, it can't rain. It's D-Day. And I was just dying watching this trailer and immediately texted you about it because it was just so funny and just made me think of how we're just like white people be scraping the bottom of the barrel to keep making these World War II movies when I know there are better stories out there of like, you know, because I also right before this finished a book about like Black American history and sort of the unsung heroes of these various moments in our history. And it's like some of these stories are crazy. Like some of these heroes are so cool and like their experiences are so like cinematic and yet we don't ever see them. And it's like, I think we just don't want to ever, like, you know, the US is too sensitive to ever be the bad guy. So it's like the movies always have to be about US saves the world. And the last time that happened, it was World War II where we could, at least the propaganda allowed us all to believe like, oh, World War II, like America's the hero. We stepped in and we saved the world. We stopped it, blah, blah, blah. And so we just keep on making the weirdest movies about World War II.
No, when you sent me this trailer, I had not seen it or heard of this movie, and I was like agog watching it. The trailer is so funny. It truly could have been aired as is in an episode of SNL, and it like iconic. I can't so wait funny. To see this because it's going to be so bad. It's going to be terrible. And I'm like, Brendan Fraser should not have been won that Oscar for The Whale. Like, I'm sorry,
he's
not a good actor. Like,
to find his footing here.
Yeah, and also I'm just like, wasn't like he does not look at all like Eisenhower. Not that you need to in a movie or whatever, but I'm like, wasn't Eisenhower sort of like a thin, gangly, bald man? And here we have Brendan Fraser, who's like this big. I mean, I don't know. I guess in the pictures of Eisenhower I've seen, he's like skinnier.
So funny.
But this movie looks absolutely ridiculous, and I am like, we have gone too far in the World War II category. Yeah. We've like, people like World War II. Obviously, it's a very clear, like, hero versus villain narrative because the Nazis are just, like, so evil in what they've done. Yeah. And people love World War II stories, but this is ridiculous. Like, maybe so we've gone too far. Like, maybe we've finished out the type of World War II stories that we can do. Yeah. It did remind me of the Tyler Perry movie, though, that Diane Warren wrote a song for that was about Kerry Washington leading a group of women who were sorting mail during World War II.
Yeah, important. Which,
and that was like over 2 hours. That was way too long and also really bad.
Well, even Nuremberg, it was like, is this a full feature film we need? Like, I don't know what's happening.
And it's like, there are already movies about Nuremberg. Like, there are already movies about D-Day. Like, isn't Saving Private Ryan about D-Day, I think? Yeah. So it's like, we've seen this before. We don't is Dunkirk, is that D-Day or is that a separate thing?
Well, now we look like idiots.
But I'm like, I've seen this movie before, and also I don't care that much about the weather. Like, this is such a bizarre side plot. I will say, a story that I'm like, we need to have turned into a movie immediately is, I just finished Zone One by Colson Whitehead, which I
so good. Read,
the zombie book that he wrote.
Yes.
And I'm like, this is so ready made to be a movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, get Michael B. Jordan on the line. Like,
he would be
so good in this role of this man going through abandoned buildings in New York, like sweeping up, killing the leftover zombies that have been sort of like locked in rooms. And
talk about corporate America. Like, there you have it.
it's so cinematic. Like, between this, I mean, it would cost $9 million because you'd have, I want parts of it shot on location in Lower Manhattan. Yeah. And you'd need
like, how much did Day One cost? You know, A Quiet Place.
They didn't shoot that in New York, famously. they shot that elsewhere. But I'm like, you really don't even need, like, that many months. Like, that final scene would be big. But otherwise, it's mostly, like, them just sort of going through these offices and then flashbacks to, you know, to scenes that are interesting. Like, it would be such a good movie.
I know. I'm glad you liked it. I was worried.
And it's a book that like is obviously meant to be adapted into a movie rather than a TV series. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain books where you're like, it's like, no, this is a 2-hour movie. Like, exactly. Like, there's exactly the right number of scenes that you would need to fill that up. Okay. Anything else regarding Mike and Nick and Alice or other pop culture ephemera?
No, I was excited to support small artists, but some of these guys, they should remain smaller.
Thank goodness. I think our next couple, well, wait, are you gone next week?
I know, I'm gone next week. I'm so mad. We'll have to do our coverage of the drama the following week.
I mean, we have the Super Mario movie. No. We have the drama. Then we have what I think is going to be terrible, but I'm sort of growing into being excited about Yumi in Tuscany.
Thank you, sir. Exactly.
I keep seeing the trailer with the Janet Jackson song, and I'm like, I think the Janet Jackson song is doing a lot of heavy lifting here to get me excited for this movie. Yeah. But I'm like, let me download this. Let me listen to it.
That's a small artist we need to support. Okay, that's a voice of the people we need to.
Then we've got rom-coms, Mother Mary, which, I can't wait.
Break.
Mother Mary, I cannot wait to discuss.
No.
You know what we will not be covering on this podcast? I'm saying this now, is the Michael Jackson movie. I'm like, I don't need to see that.
That's okay.
No.
Yeah.
Pass. But then we have Devil Wears Prada 2, Sheep Detectives, lots of stuff coming up. The new Star Wars movie, like the next couple months, we've got good stuff, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We will not have an episode next week, but we will be back the following week. To discuss the drama.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening. Bye.